So Melissa, it's so nice to meet you, and I'm so happy that you're here with us today. We have a nice group here to learn more about guiding eyes. And so I'm going to go ahead and just hand it on over to you. So everybody, give a big CCB welcome to Melissa with Guiding Eyes.
Thank you. Gosh, where to begin even? I can give you a little bit of background, I suppose, and then I don't want to, give you the same presentation as some of you might have heard last year. Hopefully, we have some more interesting changes since things are sort of back to normal. Guiding Eyes is based in Yorktown Heights, New York. We primarily have Labradors. I'd say 85% of our dogs that we put out are Labradors, black and yellow. And then we've also got a small percentage of German Shepherds for our diehard Shepherd fans. And typically, before the pandemic, we'd put out around 160 graduate teams per year. Certainly, the pandemic probably cut that in half that first year. I think this last year we were pretty darn close to our normal numbers, just because a lot of instructors did a ton of home trainings. Since we couldn't bring as many people into New York for our residential class program, it freed up a lot of instructors to go do home trainer trainings out in the world. I personally lost count. I don't know how many home trainings I did over the last year and a half, but I know I did over 12. And typically, my position is a regional guide dog mobility instructor or field rep. Typically, home trainings were not my priority. I would maybe do one or two if time allowed. My goal is primarily to get out and do home interviews, assess new applicants, provide emergent, follow-ups for people who need assistance, that type of thing. So, but we weren't doing so much in-person stuff, so it again freed us up to do a ton of home trainings. So that was really fun, actually, to go out and kind of change up my role for a year and a half. And I can say that I'm kind of back to my normal routine now, but certainly the pandemic has shifted a lot of things at Guiding Eyes, as well as I'm sure other guide dog schools. It gave us time to really evaluate our program and see where our strengths were, where our weaknesses were. And in that time, we've kind of rewritten the rule book in a sense. And I think we're changing up a lot of things. In fact, a lot of things have just been rolled out in the last week, and we're starting to kind of get a grip on how things are going to look moving forward. And I think one of the big things that was actually just even announced to our graduate population is that we're going to create a graduate like ex or a client experience team. So we're going to have a team of our staff that really focuses on, beginning to end, and primarily that application process to make sure that people feel supported with their applications. They're not falling through the cracks. They're being coached on, getting their documents in, getting help with getting references, all that stuff. And we're actually encouraging or hoping that we're going to get more of our graduates on staff in some of those positions. So that's kind of cool. One of the other interesting things is I know we just bought a piece of land near our original campus in Yorktown Heights to build new kennels because our kennels are probably 50 plus old. 50 plus years old, and we've been patchworking them, I guess you could say, over the last many years just to keep them up and running. But we really need new kennels. So I'm not exactly sure when ground is going to break on construction and stuff, but we do have plans for new kennels here in the near future. And as far as currently, what we instituted when we started having classes again last year is we started doing a 2-to-1 ratio, so two students to one instructor. We typically had a 3-week residential program. We did shorten that to a 2-week residential program, but with the 2-to-1 ratio, it certainly allowed us to really customize the training. So, with the 3-week program, we pretty much had a set routine. Here's what you're going to do. Here's where you're going to go. Everybody's going to do it. Doesn't matter where you live or what you're going home to. But with the 2-to-1 ratio, we can really customize your training and focus on exactly what you need to go home to your home area. So, currently, we are doing 4 students per 2-week class and 2 instructors. So, 2 classes a month, 8 total graduates. And then on top of that, we're still doing quite a few home trainings as well. So, we're still putting out about 12 students per month, which was kind of where we were at last year. So hopefully that will keep us at our 160 grads per year. That's our goal. And we did graduations. Basically, we did quarterly graduations. So we would have kind of a Zoom virtual platform where our staff and our graduates would get online and kind of give presentations on the different students and the different experiences everyone had. The cool thing we did was we created an individual page on our website for every single graduate. So you can still go on our website and look at different graduate pages. I think it's kind of nice because everyone can kind of go look. You get to put a little bio on there. There's a bunch of pictures of you during training. There's puppy pictures from your puppy raiser. And then there's quotes from the graduate and from the puppy raiser. So it's actually kind of nice to be able to go through and look at the different graduate pages. And then we did the quarterly virtual presentations. Pretty shortly, though, I do know that we are going to go back to in-person graduations coming up here soon. Don't have a date for that, but I know probably in the next couple months, we'll at least start inviting the puppy raisers in for graduations. You know, I know New York is still dealing with more COVID transmission with the variants than different parts of the country. So I think they're still being a little cautious. I don't know if you all know, I'm based in Denver as a field rep. So I can't say I'm completely up to snuff on how COVID is affecting batting eyes. I hear little bits here and there, but I'm all over the country. So I just try to be cautious wherever I go. I'm trying to think what else is of interest. Our breeding program hasn't changed. You know, we didn't breed as many dogs last year. I think a lot of schools kind of did the same thing where we paused and everyone stopped breeding for a couple periods during the last year or so, or during 2020. So that is going to affect us. Right now, we're recalling puppies in for training that are over 2 years old because they've been out so long. So right now, a lot of the dogs that graduate are two and a half. But we've actually found it's kind of nice because the dogs are much more mature and settled when they go into training with you. So it makes it a lot easier. But here pretty soon, we're going to have to swing the pendulum just because we're catching up with that. And then we're probably going to end up bringing dogs back in around that 14 to 16 months. So trying to think what else is exciting for us. Some of you may know Kathy Zubricki was our director of training for many, many years, 20 years. She recently retired. Some of you know Del Rodman. He's been in the guide dog industry for probably 40 years. He is our new director of training, which is kind of exciting because he knows the industry in and out. So that's very good for us. I'm pretty excited about some of the different changes that are happening in guide dogs. I mean, obviously, guiding eyes, we're obviously trying to, you know, improve everything, really looking at the client services and certainly the dog training. You know, our training cycle is still about a 20-week training cycle. So the dogs are in training for about 20 weeks on average. And then they go to class for the 2 week period. One thing we're doing though, one thing that is kind of cool that we're looking at, you know, we have our now 2 week training program. And I would say it's controversial as to whether or not that's enough time for a first time student. So what we're really looking at is trying to provide those students with a home visit very shortly after class to help them establish their routes with their new guide dog. And it would just be a period of like 3 to 5 days in their home area as needed. So that's kind of nice. And we'll see how that progresses. And then, you know, certainly resources as needed. You know, if they need some support in their home area, we can do that too. And then of course, our special programs, you know, we still have our specialized training program where we can service the deafblind population, people with additional disabilities, balance issues, dogs who need to be trained maybe on the right side for different reasons. And certainly those dogs end up being in training for much longer than the 20 weeks just to customize that training. And then the one other thing that we do is our running guide program. So we're still doing that and still gaining a lot of interest. We do get a lot of applicants who are very keen on learning how to run with their guide dog. And some of you may have seen the new harnesses that we designed to do that. We collaborated with Roughwear and designed kind of a nice harness. It's very different than your traditional leather harness. It's actually kind of like, it's like one of Roughwear's body harnesses or maybe like a small vest. It's very lightweight. It allows for more shoulder reach. So, you know, if a dog is running, they can reach a little farther than in their traditional leather harness. and it has a single point connection. So your typical leather harness is connected to both points on the shoulder. And this harness is a single bar that comes off the middle of the dog's back, and then it has a fully adjustable handle. You can put it in any position that you want ergonomically. So, and we're letting all students try both harnesses while they're in class, and then they basically get the choice to go home with the one that they prefer. And I think, you know, I think the newer people really love them because they're not used to the leather harness. Some of the retrains find it pretty odd. But I've seen a fair amount of retrains to go home with it too, because they like the ergonomics of it. So it is very unique. What else? I'm certainly open to questions too and discussion. Trying to think if I've left out anything interesting and exciting. Do you guys have any questions?
Hi, this is Phil. I have a question about the running. You really caught my attention with... So is this harness designed so that... Where's the position of your hand? In other words, are you... Is it elevated so that you're not leaning over?
So... Gosh, it is hard to explain. It's really technology that Roughwear created, but basically it's a telescoping pole. So you can get however long you want. Mm-hmm. And most runners want it to be a little longer than what your guidework harness would be positioned. So you're kind of a little farther behind the dog. And then the handle can twist into whichever position you want to put your hand in. You know, because runners, you typically don't have your hand parallel to the ground. You have it more your body, so you can actually twist that handle into a more natural position for running. Now the handle is still rigid, so it's not like you can then swing your arms like you would naturally do in running, but at least it puts your hand and elbow in a nicer position. And it's nice too because the handle easily pops off the harness body, and the harness body has, you know, guide dog on it, and then your school's logo. It's very visible. It comes orange and yellow or teal or gray. A lot of people love the visibility. And I love it for like travel because you can pop that handle off and they've got a really nice visible guide dog harness on their body.
Well, thank you.
Bob Acosta has a raised hand.
Okay. Bob?
Real quick, a dumb question and then a better one. When the dog is running with you, is he guiding? Is he going to go around trash cans and cars and people and all that?
That is a great question. I'm glad
it is. Oh, I thought you said, what a foolish question.
No, you know, historically we've always said, you know, don't run with your guide dog.
That's right. That's why I'm asking it.
Yeah. Your dog doesn't, you know, when you're at a higher speed, your dog doesn't have that same level of reaction time, right? You know, even if your dog stops on a dime, you potentially catapult into whatever the thing was because you were in a rhythm. So running is pretty structured. You know, you're certainly not going to go into downtown, whatever city where you've got pedestrians and trash cans.
No,
and sand
I would, no.
Stuff and go running sidewalk. That would be not safe. So we typically recommend if you're going to run with your guide dog, you have an environment that is much more open, right? Okay. So, you know, bike paths that aren't heavily populated, flat trails that don't have a lot of rocks sticking out of the ground. Some people actually even do tracks, you know, high school tracks, call it, you know, tracks in a gym.
Oh, yes.
Now, okay. Not all love running in a circle. I'll admit that. Some don't want to do it. But you're looking for a wide open, you know, quiet residential streets, wide residential sidewalks, places where the obstacles, pedestrians are going to be kind of few and far between, right? But yes, in those environments, your dog will run and still move you around or slow down for those obstacles because they have plenty of time to see them coming.
Oh, great. And the other question is age limit of clients. And what about hard of hearing clients and blind at your school? If I missed that, I apologize.
Minimum age, as I think most schools, is 16. Certainly will, you know.
Right. No, the other age I'm worried about. The other end.
We don't have an end age. I mean, we've got we have a 92-year-old out there with a guy.
Holy smokes. Okay.
Able and still out there walking. We're not going to.
And so, what about what about hard of hearing and blind, you know, but you can hear, but do you deal with them?
We have a wide spectrum of that. And I did, so our specialized program, we actually have staff that does ASL. So we work with deaf blind. And
great.
Yeah, we'll deal with the spectrum.
Do you know Graham Buck?
Yes, I do.
I just got his book on Bookshare. He was in a program. He was excellent. Very, very good representative.
Yes, he's very well known, well respected. Okay. We're all.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And Nellie Emerson has her hand up. Nellie, you can unmute.
Hi there. Thank you for your presentation. My question is, if a student opts to go home with the rough wear harness, how does that impact traffic work, since the handle has a lot more mobility than the standard handle? And what is your opinion about the safety in, you know, in a traffic situation where the dog, you know, has to back up real fast?
It's still pretty rigid. I mean, it is it's a bar essentially that's connected on, and even the harness body has a rigidity to it. So it's still safe. It still works. And you would do traffic training with that harness in class so that you can understand how that feels compared to a leather harness. So I don't believe we've compromised in that area, feels different.
I see. Thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions?
Melissa, this is Sarah. Could you tell us a little bit more about, you talked about in-home training that was happening during the pandemic, during the height of the pandemic. We're not out of the pandemic, really. Well, can you tell us a little bit more about that? Was that, you know, for new dogs or people who needed, you know, some refresher? What exactly were you guys doing?
Yeah, no, it was for everyone. I think, you know, Dog Nice has historically always done a pretty high number of home trainings annually. And we'll take any case into consideration. You know, it's not just retrains. We actually do quite a few first-time applicants just based on lifestyle. You know, we understand that people have children, people have jobs, or they're running their own businesses that they can't do virtually or they can't do from afar. So we'll take any situation under consideration. Typically, when we do a home training, for a retrain, it's usually around 10 days. For a first-time applicant, we try to do 12 to 14 days. But again, we'll take it case by case. And the fact that you're getting one-on-one training, we're in your home environment, so we're actually establishing your routes with you throughout training, it certainly sets you up for success. So, gosh, I think we did close to 60 home trainings during the, like, that year and a half of the pandemic, you know, after March of 2020 into 2021. I think we did around 60, 65 home trainings for both. And I think I did an equal amount of first-time applicants and retrain applicants. So the nicest thing is it's just so customized that it certainly sets you up for, you know, really nice success. And, you know, I'm not sure how many of you have guide dogs, but I hear all the time, you know, you come to class, you have 2 to 4 weeks of this really intensive education training. Here's your dog. Learn all about the husbandry, the grooming, the playing, the feeding, the picking up, and then the guide work mechanics. And you learn all this stuff in that environment, but then you go home and it's almost overwhelming, right? Because then you're like, well, now what? What do I do? Where do I begin? Right? So I do think there certainly are benefits to home training. Now, traditionally, I will say, and you know, we'll see if this changes, our home training wait time has been around 2 to 3 years. Now, we were able to catch up with a lot of that during the pandemic, and we'll see how that levels out once we kind of get back on track, you know, with some normalcy. Will we still have that wait time for home training? I hope not. I know that my field rep team, as I said before, we didn't typically do a lot of home trainings, but now we do have a goal of doing 4 per year each. So there's 7 of us. So 7 times 4 is 28. I mean, that's 30 right there in addition to what we typically did. So hopefully we'll be able to kind of keep that home training wait list moving a little quicker than historically was. So, yeah.
That is very cool. And I have a follow-up question. How do you match than the person, you know, with their guide? Like, how do you figure that out?
I mean, it's not a lot different than when we do it, you know, when you come into class. Certainly it's based on your home interview, right? So, you know, if I come out and interview you, we spend about 3 hours together. We do Juno. So I get a feel for what your capabilities and comfort levels are. We certainly talk about the type of dog you want. And then when it comes down to it, and we've decided we have a potential match for you, we're probably going to call you on the phone again and kind of run some of these temperament traits by you on the phone. You know, certainly if they send a dog from New York out to Denver for me to place with a student in California, we better be darn sure that it's going to be a really good match, right?
Right.
Yeah, those matches are easier to make when you're a retrain because we know you really well and we have history on you. The first time applicant matches can be a little trickier. But I will say in the 12 plus home trainings I did last year, we only had one dog that didn't work out. So that's really not different than, you know, even a class, you know, because I think every class or so, every 10 to 20 people, you might have one dog in class that we decide, yeah, that's not a match. Let's run down to the kennel and get you a different dog to work with. Right. And you know, in home trainings, we can't do that. So if a dog doesn't work out, that dog has to, you know, go back to New York or be issued to somebody else in the Western states. And then we got to find another dog for you, which is going to take a little time. We might not have a backup for you right away. So I will say that's a little trickier, but luckily it's not common. So.
Charlene, go ahead, please.
I was wondering if having home training, if that makes a difference on the bonding between the student and the dog, because if you go to the school, you have 24-hour attention to the dog, but once you're home, you got phone calls coming, you got kids to watch, you got this and that and the other. So the dog doesn't get as nearly as much time. Does that actually play out?
That's an interesting question. I can't say I've seen that too much. And I do think, you know, even though they're doing home training, a lot of times they can reduce their hours for the first few days, or we'll start like on a Friday. So we have the weekend for them to really focus on the dog. One interesting thing I did start doing in the last year was with local clients or clients I could do this with, and retrains primarily, not first timers, you know, especially if they've never had a dog. But with retrains, I would actually go give them their dog a week or so before we even started the harness training so that they could just have the dog in their home, bond with it, you know, and they would still hold the, you know, if they've got family members, they're going to keep the dog on leash with them. They're going to feed it. You know, the family's not going to really interact with the new dog as much because we want that bond to solidify with the student. And I have to say that was incredibly valuable. I even had one student where I issued the dog about 2 weeks prior to our training starting. And I went ahead too. She's a very capable handler. I told her, you know, if you want to start taking this dog on walks with your cane and start patterning the dog to the routes you're going to do. So, you know, show the dog where to stop at a curb, give it a cookie, heel it across the street, stop at the curb, give it another cookie. So this woman literally patterned the dog on all the routes that she was going to do when we started training. And by the time I showed up and we put the harness on the dog and went to work, it was like, I didn't even need to be there. The dog was just like, yep, got it. Seen it, been there, done it. I know exactly how to do it. So, that was really cool. So that's something we're playing with students that we can do that with. You know, we've got to be a little closer to be able to drop the dog and then come back in a week or two. But I haven't seen any issues where people are struggling with bonding with the dog. I think, but you know, it's going to vary like anything. It just depends on what their focuses are. Any other questions?
Any hands, Larry?
None.
Wow, yeah, I must look good.
You are. This is so cool. No, I honestly, I will tell you that I don't have a guide dog. I have many friends that have guide dogs, of course. But I never knew that there was a possibility of home training, which is really cool. Because like you said, that some people have, you know, jobs that they can't run away from necessarily. And so that's a great alternative. I do have one more question, because you said that you guys kind of, you know, work with people in all situations. Do you have experience with working with people who also have intellectual and developmental disabilities?
Depends, right? So it depends on the spectrum. We've certainly worked with some traumatic brain injury clients and stuff, but you know, they either have to have the ability to have a family member support them, help them with the care of the animal, or they have to be able to, you know, care for that animal independently. So I think it just depends on their level of independence and what kind of family support they have. And capability, right? Can they manage a dog? You know, is the dog going to be beneficial in enhancing their independence? You know, what is the purpose? But yeah, again, our specialized training department takes all those cases under consideration. So, you know, they'll do a home interview, assess the specific situation and determine if that's something we can specifically, specially train a dog for. So yeah, possible. I think trained are for like more physical disabilities, you know, balance, muscular issues, and limited limb use. So yeah, we try to stay open.
Have you ever had anyone who uses a wheelchair?
Not Guiding Eyes for the Blind. You know, most of you might be aware that Guide Dogs for the Blind up in Oregon did start a very specific, amazing wheelchair program that they did for probably 10, 12 years. But then the lead trainer, Michelle Pouliot, who kind of started and implemented that program, retired. And it was such an intensive, in-depth program that there was just nobody that was interested in taking it over. So unfortunately, there aren't any schools right now that are doing that. You know, it was a very specific electric wheelchair that you had to work with and be able to acquire. And the dog usually had to go under about a year of training. It was really intensive training. So unfortunately, there really aren't any wheelchair programs around right now.
Oh, it would be valuable.
Oh, sorry, Sarah.
It's okay. Go for it, Bob.
My turn?
Go ahead.
Your turn.
All right. I just want to share, if I may. When I got my first home trained dog in California, we passed a law saying the schools could do it in California. I was able to teach school, work at 6 a.m. with my dog, with a trainer, teach school all day long, because it's a long story. I won't get into why they did it. And then after school, and it worked very well because I was an experienced handler and my dog fit in beautifully. He got used to the class. And everything was great. And I knew the school. So I'd say, let's go to the library. And at first I had to really give commands. Then later we led the class to the library easily. So I just wanted to share that. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fantastic. I think there's pros and cons to home training versus residential program, as anything, you know. I do think some people like to go to the residential program because, you know, like someone pointed out, you have that focus, right? 24/7, that's all your focus on getting that dog, learning about everything with that dog and not having to worry about anything else. And to some degree, it's a little bit of a vacation and you meet new friends and, you know, make new social connections. So I think some people really like the residential program. But again, it just comes down to what fits each person individually and what works best for you.
Charlene, go ahead, please.
I was wondering if the schools ever thought about working with canine companions, for instance, because they could train the dog for the use around a wheelchair, and then the school could train the guiding part. Because there are people who are blind and in a wheelchair.
Oh, I know.
They're stuck.
Valuable program when it existed. I think it's a tricky subject only because, you know, you've got the guide dog programs, which are internationally accredited through the International Guide Dog Federation. And then you've got the service dog schools who are accredited through Assistance Dogs International. I don't know. I think it would be difficult to collaborate. Mm-hmm. Certainly not impossible, but I just don't think that's ever been broached or come out. I'm not sure how, who would start that.
Yeah. I'm just thinking maybe if both
together and train
both groups you know, worked at it, then maybe that could work it, because you know, it would really be something valuable.
Yeah. Interesting concept. I know we've done breeding collaborations with CCI and different service dog programs, but I don't know if anybody's done training collaborations.
Never say never, right?
Oh, we try not to.
You know, because I'm really thinking about, you know, I have a good friend who has MS, and she has some vision issues, and I was thinking of her. I was like, ah, because I think she would do well with that guide dog. I'm like,
Is she in a wheelchair or?
Yeah, no. She uses a wheelchair.
Yes. Yeah. And I know historically, I believe the wheelchair program was only offered to people who had had dogs when they were able-bodied and then ended up in a wheelchair for whatever reason. And I'm not sure what the reasoning on that was, but I think those were the only type of applicants that we accepted because they had some experience and background to then apply it to being in a wheelchair. I'm not sure. I mean, it was a lot to learn. Because you had to learn how to operate the chair and then coordinate it with the dog and teach the dog to respect the chair. And you know, it was interesting. It was a fascinating program when it existed. And it was unfortunate that nobody wanted to carry it on.
Any other questions for Melissa? Doesn't look like it. Well, Melissa, thank you so much for coming and hanging out with us. I super duper appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. I always enjoy talking dogs.
Hey, you, me too. Like I said, I don't have a guide dog. I had my best friend's retired guide dog for quite a while, but so I got to enjoy him as a lazy dog.
I like lazy dogs.
Oh yeah. No, he did. He got lazy, but. All right. Well, thank you so much. You have a beautiful rest of your Saturday, and hopefully we can connect again because it's been lovely. I super appreciate you.
Yeah, no, thank you. You guys enjoy the rest of your conference. Have a great weekend. Thanks.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.